Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to Raymond Burr Podcast, Fort Laramie. This is the episode, the 22nd episode of the series, where Kathleen Height takes over the writing exclusively. She writes for the rest of the series. She'll write every single episode. I have talked before about how much I love her writing. I think today I want to visit Gunsmoke to give you more of an insight into Kathleen Height a little bit. So over on Gunsmoke, she wrote some of the episodes for the radio show, not too many. Then it comes to television, and it's a half-hour black and white show for the first six seasons. Yeah. And those seasons, she doesn't write too much for. The very last season will give you a little insight. John Meston has to do with the writing. He doesn't write exclusively every episode, but he writes 29 of the episodes. He has a strong hand in the episode. Kathleen Height writes four of the episodes of the last season of the half hour Gunsmoke. Then Gunsmoke changes to be an hour long black and white show. These episodes, the hour black and whites, are my favorites. They are not seen nearly as much as either the half hour black and whites or the hour long color episodes, but they, to me, stand out. They give the characters a chance to breathe in the hour, where we really get to know the characters even stronger and introduce interesting new characters. Quint Asper, played by Burt Reynolds, I really love his character, and they're only in the hour long black and whites. Anyway, Kathleen Height, for the first season of black and white hour-long shows, writes 10 of the episodes, and Meston writes 18. So you can see she starts to become more on an equal ground with John Meston, or at least closer than anybody else. The rest of the episodes are written by a lot of different folks, and with Les Crutchfield being probably the one that writes third amount of episodes of anybody, probably. And he'll continue on. He's the only writer that wrote for Gunsmoke from the beginning all through, even into the color years. Not always that many episodes, maybe four, roughly a season or something, but definitely wrote throughout. Now, Meston and Kathleen Height would kind of share main writer duties on Gunsmoke for the next three seasons of the Black and Whites. Then in the very last season of Black and White, it changes to essentially the color format. It doesn't change to color. It's still in black and white, but the writing changes, and Meston writes none of the scripts. Kathleen Height writes none of the scripts. They bring in all new writers, except for Les Crutchfield, continues to write. I think at that point he wrote four for that season, something like that. But to me, the show then changes throughout that point in the color years. That's where I start calling it, jokingly, Gunsmoke Love Boat. Because the characters, the main characters, the four main characters we've gotten used to as being the leads on the show, kind of take a back seat to whoever the guest star is for that week, and the story is more about the guest star. It's not even in the black and white years in the black and white years, other than that last season of black and white, whether it's half hour, whether it's an hour, when we have guest stars, it's always about their interaction with the main cast. They'll have a issue that Matt Dillon will have to come involved with, and the story revolves around Matt and them, or Kitty and the guest stars, or Doc, or Chester, or Festus, whatever. But in the color years, and that last year of black and white, it more is all about the guest stars and their interactions to each other, with the cast kind of being, like I say, like the Love Boat cast, where they're sort of there in the background and they'll have a scene or two here or there with whatever's going on, but it won't be the major crux of the show, with the exception of Matt sometimes being more involved for sure, but often not so much. So that's kind of the way I see the whole kind of Gunsmoke series. And like I say, my favorite episodes are those hour-long black and whites where Kathleen Height is at the peak of her writing of Gunsmoke. And those are treasures for sure. You can get those the hour-long black and whites on DVD for not too expensive these days. And sometimes it's crazy. You'll look at the DVD sets and it'll be like, okay, well, this one, the second half of season 6 or whatever, let's say the color seasons, colors are 7. So let's say the second half of season 7, you look at it and you go, oh, that's selling for $40. And you go, that's too much. And then you look, oh, it's the first half of season 7. Oh, look, that's going for $12.95. So there's no real rhyme or reason as to why some sets are so expensive and some sets are so inexpensive. But whatever, it is what it is. So that's one way to get them. Another way is if you get CBS All Access like I do to watch the Star Trek episodes that I love, the new Star Trek series, Discovery, and I guess just Discovery now, but they have a bunch of new series coming out. Oh, and Picard, too, came out. Anyway, on that, they'll have what's called Gunsmoke Season 1 and Season 2, which are very misleading. Season 1 is the first season of the hour-long black and whites that they have, and Season 2 is the second season of the hour-long black and whites. And then, for some reason, they have the episodes all mixed up out of order, which doesn't matter too much on Gunsmoke. I just don't know why they have it that way. So, like, Quint Asper in the second season is where he gets introduced. He gets introduced on the third episode. Well, on their version of what they have available, he's introduced. I mean, he's in, I think, you know, maybe every episode from the beginning, according to their set. And then he's introduced in, like, the 18th episode, which I guess you'd look at it as kind of a flashback or something, but that's not how it was originally intended. But whatever, that's a way to be able to watch those first two seasons very inexpensively. Anyway, so that's we spent a lot more time on Gunsmoke than we did on Fort Laramie today. I'll probably put this as an intro to one of the Gunsmokes as well, because I think it's interesting to Gunsmoke listeners. But I think we covered enough ground on Kathleen Height and the work that she did on Gunsmoke. And like I say, in case I didn't mention it, she did about 10 episodes per season for the first four seasons of the black and white hour-long Gunsmokes. So that's, 40 episodes, I guess, over that time frame. And then she did some of the half hours as well. So I love her writing. It's the most similar to Meston. I think that's probably why Meston used her so much, because she could get that same feel that he could with some of the complexity that Les Crutchfield can bring. So she's a great hybrid writer. So we'll see where Fort Laramie goes. I don't think I've listened to these episodes before, so it'll be interesting to hear them for the first time. Today's episode is The Loving Cup. I hope you're going to enjoy it and enjoy writer Kathleen Height and what she's going to do for us the whole rest of the season. Enjoy.
At the gallop!
Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Oh, you want another piece of pie, won't you, Captain?
Oh, no, ma'am, I sure won't.
Now, Captain.
Now, Mary.
Just another little sliver.
Oh, I thank you kindly, Mrs. Daggett, but I've got no more room.
Why, you hardly ate a thing.
Mary?
Oh, my. And I promised, didn't I, dear?
You promised. Although why I thought you'd keep it is beyond me.
You see, Captain, I'm under orders, too. When you come to dinner, I'm not to urge more food upon you than you voluntarily take.
It was a fine dinner, ma'am.
Thank you. But you see, I've been guilty of smothering you. Or mothering you, I can never remember which.
It amounts to about the same thing, doesn't it, Lee? I'm a neutral in this kind of war, Major. Yeah. A smart neutral, too. You got both sides looking out for your best interests.
I haven't finished telling you the rest of my orders, Captain. Under the circumstances, I've really behaved with remarkable restraint all evening.
Yes, ma'am.
I haven't once mentioned the name Willa Burgess.
At least you know I tried, Lee.
But now that her name has come up, I'd like to say that I think she's a lovely person. Quite lovely, in fact. To me, Willa is an amazing combination of qualities.
You should have taken another piece of pie, Lee, and spared yourself this.
Well, next time I'll remember.
She's warm, feminine, yet she's capable, with great strength of character. And if I were a man...
But you're not, my dear. A fact which delights me most of the time.
But not now.
Emphatically not now.
Well, then this must be the time for me to remember the mending I must do. If you gentlemen will excuse me.
Let me help you, dear.
It doesn't look as if I can avoid it.
Miss Daggett?
Oh, please come again, Captain. I'll probably be every bit as bad next time, but I do enjoy having you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, ma'am.
Oh, there's brandy and cigars in the living room. You'll be glad to know I don't care for any.
Good night, dear.
Good night. Try not to miss me too much.
Yeah, she's improving, Lee. That's the fastest retreat she's ever staged.
Oh, she's all right, sir.
Yes. Yes, she is.
She said, brandy.
Hmm?
Brandy.
Oh, yes, yes, she did. Oh, I can remember how it was, Lee. When I was a bachelor officer, I thought the worst duty I could draw was a dinner invitation from a ranking officer who was married.
Oh, it depends on the officer.
And his wife.
I didn't suffer tonight, sir.
Oh, good. Well, make yourself comfortable, Lee. Sit down. If your belt's tight, your blouse or your boots, undo them.
Much obliged.
Cigars are in the humidor.
Yep. You're smoking better tobacco than you used to.
Yeah, I am. Here's your brandy, Lee.
Thanks. Cigar, Major?
Thanks.
Have them made up special, do you?
Well, a friend sends them to me.
Yeah, must be a good friend. That's good tobacco. You remember that night outside Richmond, Major? It was cold as sin. We were billeted in that plantation.
I remember. It's funny you'd think of Richmond just now.
Yeah. It is. What was her name?
Lee,
pretty little thing. Wouldn't pass the time with the rest of us, I remember, but she kept worrying whether you were going to be warm enough.
That was a long time ago.
Seems to me that was a tobacco plantation.
Lee, Mary and I have been married for almost 6 years. It's a good marriage.
Yeah, I think it is.
Mary wouldn't understand Richmond.
You weren't married then.
She still wouldn't understand. No, these cigars,
They're good cigars.
Yeah. They're good cigars.
Yeah, we go back quite a ways, you and I.
Since the old days of the 3rd Cavalry, the Battle of Bull Run.
A lot of years, Lee.
A lot of life. A lot of death, Major.
I guess I know you as well as you permit anyone to know you.
Permit? Oh, that's heavy talk on one brandy, Major.
Well, there's more brandy.
And more talk?
More talk, Lee. You better brace yourself.
Yep. I'm fortified.
I took the last two patrols out for a purpose.
Yeah, I suppose that.
Wanted to prove something to myself. I think I have. You know, he's a different man when you're not around, Lee.
Who is?
Lieutenant Syberts.
How different?
Well, he's still learning, but he's a good officer. He has judgment. He takes responsibility, makes decisions. And on the whole, they're good decisions.
I don't remember passing judgment on Mr. Syberts to you, Major.
You never have, and I'm not asking you to now.
That's good.
But I've watched him when you were around. At routine reports, strategy sessions. He freezes up. He acts stupid, bungling. And he isn't.
All right. He isn't.
He's scared to death of you.
You just have one brandy, Major?
I know what I'm talking about. It isn't your rank. He has a respect for rank, but he doesn't fear it. It's you, Lee.
Has Mr. Syberts said it was me?
He hasn't said anything. I haven't asked him about it. Now, these are my observations. I think they hold up. What do you think?
I don't know.
Well, think about it.
Think about a man being scared to death of me? I don't know how.
What do you think of Syberts, frankly?
I think he's very young.
Oh, come on, Lee.
Come on where?
We've both worked with men who were younger.
I thought you weren't going to ask me to pass judgment on Mr. Syberts.
That's right, I wasn't.
I'd just as soon leave it there, Major.
We can't leave it there.
You can't.
We can't. You know what we're up against out here as well as I do. An ineffective trooper is bad enough, but an ineffective officer is dangerous. And it's wasteful.
You figuring I can do something about Mr. Syberts?
Well, leaving that up to you. I'm asking you to think about it. I'm asking for your help.
I don't know that I'm the one to help, Major. But I'll think about it.
It might call for a change in your attitude toward him, Lee.
It might. Of course, I'd have to find out first what my attitude toward him is, wouldn't I?
Steady into it, Flint. Just you stay with him. Now fire straight away next time. Get closer to his head.
Got some new recruits, Sergeant?
Morning, Captain. You talking about the men or the horses?
Oh, the horses.
They're new. Flint's training them to stand fire.
The horse knows that, does he?
I keep saying he does. Some take a little bit more encouragement than others, you know.
You talking about men or horses?
Excuse me, Captain. All right, Flint, take him out now, beyond the hay yard. Run him real good and try firing at the gallop a while. He sure was ugly for a while, but Flint will make a steady goer out of him.
Yeah, you can tell about horses. Plungers, kickers, rearers, you work them enough. You can tell if it's in them to be a steady goer.
You know horses, you can tell.
Be helpful if you could tell about a man as easy.
A man standing fire?
Man standing anything.
If you could tell by looking, that sure would be helpful, Captain.
Now, that horse Flint's training, he's afraid of that pistol now. He's first afraid looking at it. But mostly it's the sound that scares him.
That's it. Sure it is.
But we can look at that horse and know he'll train out of it. Is that because we know horses or because we know what they're afraid of?
I'd say it was both, Captain. Maybe one thing more.
What's that?
Well, we can understand the horse would be afraid of the pistol. We figure him to be right from the start.
Yeah. Yeah, knowing he's afraid to begin with, that's a lot to know.
And then, too, that horse is bound to find out he's got nothing to fear from that pistol. Once he finds out, he ain't afraid anymore.
You saying the man ought to face up to his fears?
I was talking about horses.
Yeah, sure you were.
But about a man, well, he ought to face up to his fears. Well, maybe he can't. Maybe he don't know what they are. Or maybe knowing he don't understand them.
That way, his fear's got to face up to him.
Seems like just one thing about it, Captain. Sooner or later, they got to get together.
Captain Quince.
You, busy, Mr. Syberts?
No, sir. I was just... certainly not at all busy, Captain.
You mind if I come in?
I wish you would. I have a chair?
Yeah. You're sure you're not busy?
Not busy, no, I wasn't. Please sit down, Captain.
All right. Guess it will.
Well, I guess I'll just sit down, too.
Yeah. Make yourself at home.
I will. Thanks.
I guess you were working there at your desk.
Oh, nothing important. I keep a journal, Captain. You know, what happens day by day. Just a journal, you know?
Yeah, I know.
It's just to pass the time. You don't keep one, do you?
No, I don't.
No, I didn't think so.
No, it's all right, though. I mean, the man wants to... Oh, he wants to set things down. Why, he ought to do it.
I remember once you said that you didn't keep one because there was a lot you wanted to forget.
I probably said that.
Well, I know I just took from that you didn't approve of journals.
Did I say I didn't approve, Mr. Syberts?
No, sir. I just took from that what I thought was...
Now, wait a minute. I didn't mean to bark at you. Well, what I mean is, a lot of men keep journals, that's all. It's man wants to do it, it's up to him. It's all right.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Syberts, do you drink?
Drink?
Yeah, drink. Whiskey. You know, whiskey.
Well, sometimes... I'm not sure I know what you're talking about, Captain.
I'm talking about drinking, Mr. Syberts. You and me in a bottle of whiskey.
Now?
Right now.
I'd be proud to, Captain.
Yeah. Yeah, me too, Mr. Syberts.
Gotta be a first time for everything. Isn't that what you say? A first time for everything?
Yeah, you hear it all the time.
That's what I say, too. The first time I ever came over to Laramie Village. The drink, I mean. With a fellow officer. The drink. You do it a lot?
Sometimes. You know, when it seems like a good idea.
Well, that's a good idea. When it seems like a good idea.
Best time.
You know, when I was a cadet at the Point, a couple of us upperclassmen decided we want to go over this little tavern. Only it's across the Hudson River. And where we have to cross is no bridge.
Makes kind of wet walking.
Yeah, it does. So we made these plebes... You know what plebes are, Captain.
Yeah, I've heard about him.
Well, we made these plebes get an old barge for us. we crossed that old Hudson that night, like Washington crossing the Delaware.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. we sure enjoyed that. Oh, pour you a drink?
Oh, sure, thanks.
You know, the way I'm talking, I guess I don't need one, except... Well, I do need one. Does that sound all right?
You don't need one, but you do. Sounds all right to me.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah, I drink a little, Captain. I always get talking about West Point. I hope you don't mind.
You talk about anything that comes into your head.
You mean that?
I said it.
Oh, there's something I've wanted to talk to you about for a long time.
Well, this would be a good time to say it.
It's Clausewitz. I've always wanted to discuss Clausewitz with you.
It might be a very short discussion.
Well, you've read him, of course. Karl von Clausewitz is the Prussian?
I know who you're talking about. He wrote a stack of books hip high about military strategy.
Oh, I couldn't believe you wouldn't know about him. I think I read every word he ever wrote, some of it in the original German.
Clausewitz's field was artillery.
That is true, that is true. But still, most army men I've known feel that as a strategist, he was the greatest of them all.
Oh, you can find army men who say he produced no system of strategy at all.
No system of strategy?
What was it?
Well, in his exposition of the philosophy of war, he pointed out that all of the enemy, men, women, children, they were all part of war.
You call that a system of strategy?
In total war, you bet I do.
How about our wars here, now?
Well, doesn't apply, naturally.
Next time you fight a total war, you follow Clausewitz to the letter.
Don't you worry a little bit. I will. You don't like Clausewitz.
I can't use him. I'm in the cavalry. I fight little wars.
You don't like Clausewitz. And I don't understand it, because you're a good man, Quince. A good man, smart. Imagine me talking to you man to man this way. Imagine that.
Don't have to imagine it. We're doing it.
Now that calls for a little drink. Oh, my.
Oh, sorry. I guess I knocked that over.
You knocked it over?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? I thought I did. Oh, are you drunk, Captain?
Drunk and disorderly, Mr. Simon.
<You're> drunk. Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I don't think you know how wonderful that is. Don't you worry, Captain. I'll see that we get back to the fort in good shape.
Well, morning, Mr. Syberts.
Morning, Captain.
You look very fit.
I feel fine, sir. And you?
I'm alive, Mr. Syberts. And that's pure exaggeration.
I doused my head in a cold basin a few times. It made all the difference.
I left my head in the basin.
Oh, about last night, Captain. If I said anything, sir, out of line. Well, I did have quite a bit to drink.
And so did I. Might have said a few things myself. I enjoyed it, Mr. Syberts.
It was my pleasure.
You seen the Major yet?
No, sir. I thought we ought to present a united front, Captain.
Fine. We'll do that. Captain Quince, Lieutenant Syberts reporting, Major.
As you were, gentlemen. Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
strange bit of business has come up. I think maybe you're the man to take a patrol out and check into it. Ever been a part of a roundup, Lieutenant?
Cattle, sir? No, I haven't.
Not cattle. These are wild horses.
I didn't know you could round up wild horses.
I don't say it's easy, but... Are you listening, Captain?
Yeah, I'm listening. How many wild horses?
The report says about 50, over near the Mud Springs station. Some settlers and some folks from a wagon train are supposed to have them contained in a canyon near there.
Who says they're wild?
Until I know different, I'll have to go by the telegraph message, Captain. It says they're wild. The settlers want no part of them. They're stampeding off a lot of their stock. I think we should get them if we can before any renegade Sioux capture them.
Well, it's worth a try, sir. If we get any of them, we're ahead of the game.
When do we leave, Major?
As soon as you pick your men, take as many as you need.
I'd say it wasn't a question of how many, Major, so long as we pick the best riders. Don't you agree, Captain?
Completely, Mr. Syberts.
If that's the case. Now, look here, Lee. Gentlemen, I'll want reports regularly by telegraph and... Move out.
This your plan we're working out here, Captain?
Something wrong with the plan, Sergeant?
I can't say it's wrong. It's working.
Was Mr. Syberts with you?
No, sir. He's down there operating a lot like Napoleon.
Like Clausewitz, Sergeant.
Who's that?
Friend of Mr. Syberts. You have any trouble bringing the Indians over from the reservation?
Not a bit. You know, they're kind of peaceful-like when you got guns and they ain't. Good idea bringing Indians. Reckon they know more about wild horses than we do.
Yeah, reckon they do.
Captain, you right sure this is your plan?
Mr. Syberts and I discussed it and agreed on it. Any questions, Sergeant?
No, sir. None I'm ready to ask.
I'm riding down to the mouth of the canyon. Looks like they're cutting them out of there at a good rate. You coming?
I was told to hold this position, Captain, as a lookout.
Yeah. See, you keep a sharp eye, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Look good from a distance, Mr. Syberts.
Thanks, Captain. I'm glad you rode down. It looks even better close up.
Yeah, you got some of them on lead ropes already.
Borrowed a corral from the next ranch. Some of those Indians can sit them already. Best natural riders in the world, you know, Indians.
That's what I understand. Look to me like you got most of the 50 out of the canyon.
Well, we'll get back to Fort Laramie with at least 40 of them, Captain. Of course, that's a few days off, but we got what we came for.
Yeah, that's the important thing.
Are you feeling better?
Hmm?
Your leg, it doesn't bother you anymore?
Oh. Yeah, it's coming right along, thanks. You've done a good job, Mr. Syberts. All of it. Mighty good job.
Thank you, sir. Feels like I had.
Forgot. Brought you some cigars, Captain.
Thank you, Major. That's still good tobacco. You've come a long way from that smelly hod you used to carry.
I'm not the only one that's come a long way, Lee.
That so?
Lieutenant Syberts around?
He left just a few minutes ago. Went down to the post office. They sent word a book he'd ordered had come through.
A book?
General McClellan's book.
On the regulations and instructions for the cavalry in time of war?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be... I don't know what you did, how you managed, Lee, but you worked wonders with him. I want you to know I'm grateful.
I'm no hand at that kind of thing, Major. If the problem's not a problem anymore, you should thank Mr. Syberts.
He's a different man. That's all the thanks he needs. It's a big change, Lee. We're welding a tight-knit little force here, men who fight together and live together. Now that you and Syberts are friends...
Well, just a minute, Major. I'm a soldier. If I can help lick another soldier's problem, that's fine with me. But you're talking about friends.
You don't like Syberts?
Like him? Well, that's not my kind of word. You asked me once what I thought of him. I told you he was very young.
I took it you meant inexperienced.
Young, inexperienced. I'm calling it immature. You can get old with years, you can get experience, but maturity, that's something you earn. It's got to be in you to earn it.
Well, I don't believe in miracles, Captain. You and Syberts are night and day. Nothing will change that.
No, we're different men, that's all.
Syberts has licked a big hurdle with your help. Maybe that's the beginning of maturity.
Maybe it is, Major. Maybe. Maybe it is.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by Kathleen Height, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper, musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Jack Moyles as Major Daggett, Harry Bartell as Lieutenant Syberts, and Helen Klebe as Mrs. Daggett.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Next week, another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier and the troopers who fought under Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry. Many a culprit doesn't even know when his cigarette has started a forest fire. You're driving along through a woodland and out the window goes a live cigarette butt. Would you be apt to connect it with the next day's headlines? A property, perhaps human life too, gone up in smoke? When in or near the woods, take personal responsibility for matches and cigarettes. Make certain your matches, cigarettes, and campfires are out before you leave them anywhere. Gunsmoke, brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed, thanks to Accuray. They satisfy the most. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers,
And that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Well, for heaven's sake. Matt.
Yeah, what, Doc?
Look at that coming. It's a Surrey.
What?
A four-passenger Surrey. Oh, well, that's the first one of those I've seen west of St. Louis.
What? That's Kitty up there with a driver, isn't it, Doc?
Kitty? Oh, why, so it is. But who is the driver?
I don't know. I don't know the one sitting in back, either.
See, that's pretty fancy for Dodge.
Yeah, those are a couple of dudes, if I ever saw any.
Green as squash.
Hi, Matt. Hello, Doc.
Hi, Kitty.
Hello, Kitty.
We haven't met anyone?
Haven't even seen them, Kitty.
There they are. Marshal Dillon, Doc Adams, this is Samuel Sprague and Clifton Bunker.
Hello.
Mr. Bunker.
Quite a wagon you gentlemen have.
We brought it with us, Doctor, on the train.
We've been all over the country around here in that Surrey, haven't we, Bunker?
What are you, prospectors?
Now, Doc.
We're writers, Doctor, from New York.
Writers?
Did you ever read anything by Ned Buntline?
Oh, then you're not reporters. You write make-believe stories.
Well, we want to write true stories, Doctor, but there doesn't seem to be much material around here.
Well, I'm kind of disappointed. There hasn't been a gunfight since they arrived, and every Indian in Kansas seems to be growing old on a reservation.
We're not going to get any stories this way.
You mentioned that writer Ned Buntline, Mr. Spring. I met him once through Jim Bridger.
Oh, yes. He wrote a lot of stories about Jim Bridger's adventures.
Mm-hmm. Most of them were lies. They made Bridger look like a fool.
They also made Jim Bridger famous, Marshal.
Like Wyatt Earp. Buntline wrote about him, too.
Anything wrong with being famous?
I guess it depends how you get that way, Mr. Sprigg.
Yeah, go stir him up some Indians, Matt. A few massacred families out here would... Oh, that'd make nice reading in New York.
Yeah.
Let's go get a drink, Kitty.
You two go ahead. I'll join you.
All right. Good day, gentlemen.
Gentlemen.
Well, you were a great help.
What do you care about them, Kitty?
I don't think a series of stories in the New York papers would hurt Dodge any, do you?
Oh, she's thinking of business, Matt. I keep forgetting she's half owner of the Long Branch now.
So that's it, huh?
Of course it is. Don't want anybody killed, but you might at least be polite to him.
Haven't got time, Kitty.
What?
I gotta ride up to Hayes City tomorrow. May not be back for a week.
Good.
You want to come along?
Ha!
Introducing one of the country's best-known jazz musicians and arrangers, Mr. Bobby Haggart. How about whistling along with him?
Packs more pleasure, packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. By Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Cavalry up ahead there, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah.
Pretty sloppy looking, ain't they? Half of them ain't even setting their saddles straight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, not that I blame them none. Riding them terrible McClellan saddles.
I think they've been hit, Chester. They must have had a fight.
Hey, by golly, I think you're right.
Let's pull up.
Some of them boys is wounded. And look there. A couple of them tied across their saddles. They're dead.
I think I know that lieutenant, Chester. Yeah, it's Lieutenant Bain.
What in the world do you suppose has happened?
Company! Company! Up!
Hello, Lieutenant. Can we give you any help?
Might have this morning, Marshal.
Indians?
Chief Little Hawk.
Little Hawk? The Pawnee?
Haven't you heard, Marshal?
What? I've been in Hayes City for a week.
Little Hawk and 40 Brave jumped reservation 4 or 5 days ago.
Well, he's one of the most peaceful chiefs in Kansas, Lieutenant.
Look at my patrol, Marshal. 2 dead and 6 wounded.
I don't understand it.
Neither does anybody else. But he wiped out a family over on Walnut Creek yesterday, and he hit us this morning.
You're the only cavalry in the field?
Yeah. Funny thing. We picked up Little Hawk's trail right here, Marshal. Right out of that grove of trees.
Huh?
It's a Pawnee burying ground. Guess they stopped there to make medicine or something. Well, see you at the dance, Marshal.
Yeah, Lieutenant. I'm sorry it happened.
Yeah, so am I. Up, buddy! Up, forward!
Come on, Chester.
Them poor devils, they really got it, didn't they?
Well, they're not far from Fort Dodge now.
Where are we going? To look at this Pawnee graveyard?
Not exactly a graveyard, Chester.
Well, what is it then?
You'll see.
Dillon, what's all them poles sticking up over there with them platforms on?
Graves, Chester.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that. They bury people up in the air on them platforms, don't they?
Yeah, that's right.
But these is all new, Mr. Dillon. At least they're empty. There ain't no corpses laying on them.
No. Little Hawk must come by here to pick up his dead and take him with him.
What for?
I don't know.
They must have been in an awful hurry. Look at that platform over there.
Uh-huh.
It's half tore down.
Yeah, I noticed it.
The rest of them ain't.
No.
I declare, I don't feel right here, Mr. Dillon.
Neither do I, Chester. All right, come on, let's go.
Mr.
I'll buy us the first drinks, Mr. Dillon.
All right, Chester.
I swear my throat's solid alcohol.
Yeah, so is my...
Matt?
No, just get her.
Yeah, she wants you, Mr. Dillon.
I'll join you at the bar, Chester.
All right, sir.
Say, Alvin.
Yes, how long have you been back, Matt?
Since noon, Kitty. I had a lot of business at the bank.
Oh?
Well, not personal business, you understand.
Matt, you remember Sprague and Bunker?
No. Are those dudes still in town?
Matt, they want to talk to you.
Now, Kitty, their stories aren't going to put Dodge on the map. It's already there. Texas cattle did it, not New York writers.
Please, Matt, I'm asking you.
Well, if you're going to turn female on me.
You forget I'm part owner of this place now. I can have you thrown out.
Yeah? Well, I'd sure be talking to those two.
Right there, Matt, at that table. You see him?
No.
Well, then walk around a while. You'll find him. I'm going to talk to Chester.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Marshal Dillon.
Sit down, Marshal. Sit down.
All right.
Marshal, we've got a proposition to make you.
Oh?
You tell him, Sprigg.
Well, Marshal, we heard about those Indians. Some soldiers from Fort Dodge were in here a while ago.
And?
We want to find them.
What are you talking about, Sprigg?
Well, I don't mean find them exactly, but the next time they attack some settler, we want to be the first to get there.
That way we'd really see what it's like, Marshal. Maybe we could even talk to the survivors, if there are any.
We'll pay you well.
Pay me for what?
For guiding us, for taking us there.
What do you say, Marshal?
You want me to guide a couple of vultures like you?
That's uncalled for, Marshal.
Why don't you go back to New York, huh? They got plenty of corpses there. And they're a whole lot prettier than anything the Indians might leave for you.
Now, look here, Marshal.
Just no getting along with him at all, Sprigg.
Well, you certainly didn't talk to them very long, Matt.
Is that my drink, Chester?
No, sir, it ain't. No, it ain't. It ain't. It's yours now.
Pour yourself another one. I'll buy it.
Well, thank you. I don't mind if I do. Oh, Mr. Dillon, look at this little dido Miss Kitty's been showing me.
Huh?
Well, they had it hung up behind the bar there. See, it's all carved out of bone.
Here, let me see that, Chester.
It's interesting, isn't it, Matt?
Where'd this come from, Kitty?
Well, it's an Indian totem of some kind. Sprigg and Bunker brought it in.
Sprigg and Bunker?
But they were just lending it to us to hang behind the bar. Now what? I'll go with him, Chester.
Well, I'll go.
Where did your men get this totem?
We've had enough of you for tonight, Marshal.
Now, I want to know where you got this totem, Sprigg.
You're joking me.
Then tell me.
We got it from a soldier.
A soldier? What soldier?
A private from Fort Dodge. His name was Roger Harlow. We bought it.
What is it, Mr. Dillon?
Chester, we're riding out to Fort Dodge in the morning. And time to wake up Major Honeyman.
All right, Marshal. B Company moved out yesterday. My judgment of the situation is that they'll make almost immediate contact.
I see, Major.
But I don't like your insinuation that the cavalry is responsible for Little Hawk jumping reservation. I'll admit garrison life's dull, but no soldier in my command would want action that badly. Where's your proof, Marshal?
Right here, Major.
Why, this is a Pawnee totem.
It's more than that, Major. It's a Fox Clan totem.
Little Hawk's clan.
Yeah. Now, I've told you where I think it came from. Now, let's get that private in here and settle this, huh?
Marshal, I'll feed him to Little Hawk if this is true. Oh, Sergeant! Sergeant Grimes! Oh, what'd you say his name is?
Harlow. Roger Harlow.
Yes, Major?
Now, Sergeant, you pride yourself on knowing every man at Fort Dodge.
As regimental sergeant, I consider it my duty, sir.
What company is Private Roger Harlow assigned to?
Private Roger Harlow?
Yes, that's right.
There ain't no Roger Harlow on this post, Major. There never has been.
Where are you listening to Gunsmoke? In your kitchen? Getting ready for Sunday supper? Maybe in your living room, relaxing? Or out driving? Say, be sure and watch the road. But remember, there's pleasure ahead when you smoke Chesterfield. When you satisfy yourself with Chesterfield's better taste and mildness. It stands to reason. A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild, yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. Buy Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
You find Sprigg and Bunker last night, man?
No. We finally learned at the stable they drove out of Dodge in that Surrey yesterday morning.
You going after them?
Yeah. As soon as Chester comes with our horses.
What do you think they're up to now, man?
I wish I knew, Doc.
They ought to be hung.
Hey, Doc. Huh? Look over there. Coming into the plaza.
Oh, yeah. Well, you won't have to ride after them now.
No.
Them and their fancy Surrey. Yep, Matt, where you going?
Hello, Marshal.
Get on, Bunker. You too, Sprig. Now.
Well, all right. We saw it, Marshal. We saw practically all of it. It was exciting.
And with no help from you, either.
Oh, it was magnificent. The cavalry really got their own back this time.
What are you talking about, Bunker?
The Indians. The cavalry practically wiped them out.
What?
Yesterday, Marshal, just before dark, we were driving along the Arkansas and heard all that gunfire and commotion up ahead. And we got there just in time to see what few Indians were left running for their lives. They killed all but half a dozen of them, and they got that Chief Little Hawk, too.
You saw this, huh?
Now, Marshal, we wouldn't be making it up, would we? And I might add that it's about time we saw something around here.
You know, Sprig, I was talking to Doc Adams over there when you drove in. You know what he'd like to see?
No.
He'd like to see you and Bunker hung.
What?
And so would I.
What's the matter with you, Marshal?
Why did you tell me a soldier gave you that totem?
Oh, you found out.
Why did you lie about it?
Because you were choking me and because I didn't know what you'd do next. Or why.
Why? You men robbed a Pawnee grave. You stole a totem of Little Hawk's clan.
Well, that's all we took. Who cares about a savage idol anyway?
Little Hawk did. He went on the warpath.
Oh, nonsense, Marshal. Over a fool thing like that?
Marshal, you're not standing up for a bloodthirsty redskin, are you?
I knew Little Hawk Sprig. He was a good chief. He was a brave man and a peaceful one. Till you shamed him.
Well, he's not shamed now, Marshal. He's a good Indian.
Now you get out, both of you. You get out today. Enough men have died because of you. And you go back to New York. And when you get there, you write a story about a marshal who'd have liked nothing better than handing you over to Little Hook. If he were still alive.
In a moment, our star, William Conrad.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips. Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
You know, there's a saying on the frontier, kicking won't get you nowheres, lessen you're a mule. Well, next week, a man complains that somebody's trying to kill him and isn't believed until it happens. But that was the West. Good night.
Gunsmoke. Produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, John Daner, Joseph Kearns, Lou Krugman, and Ralph Moody. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Live modern. Smoke L&M.
Live modern. Change to L&M.
Only with L&M can you enjoy the full, exciting flavor of today's finest tobaccos through the modern miracle of the pure white miracle tip. So light up. Free up. Let your taste come alive. Live modern. Smoke L&M.
Live modern. Change to L&M.
Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke.